From the Land-Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It is the 10th day of March 2011, USDA Report Day. I'm Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Dan Zwicker of ADM Grain Group. He's in Decatur, Illinois. And a bit later in the program, crop insurance specialist with the Farm Doc team here in the College of Agricultural, Consumer, and Environmental Sciences, Gary Schnitke, will have some final words about crop insurance and whether producers should or should not sign up and which products they might consider. He's part of the Farm Doc team. You can find out more at farmdoc.illinois.edu. And as we close out our half hour together, we'll talk about the agricultural weather forecast. Pete Levitt will be here on this Thursday edition of the Closing Market Report. It is a production of Illinois Public Media from the University of Illinois.
Hi, this is Illinois Public Media Director of Agricultural Programming, Dave Dickey. More than 300 producers attended the 21st annual All-Day Agricultural Outlook meeting at the Beef House in Covington, Indiana. Soon we will be posting audio from the meeting on our website at willag.org. Click on the link in the right navigation window for the 2011 meeting. Our thanks to our agribusiness partners whose support made the 2011 meeting possible: AgriGold Hybrids, Archer Daniel Midland Company, Pioneer, the Andersons, Bates Commodities, Farm Credit Services, Risk Management Commodities, and Stuart Peterson Group.
In Chicago on this Monday afternoon, futures finished the day like this. In the wheat pit, lower at 7:14 for the March, down 18 and a quarter. May at 7:40 and a half, 18 and a quarter lower there. July at 7:72 and a half, down 18 and a half. The March hard red in Kansas City, 14 and a half cents lower at $8.39. March corn futures, $6.76 and a quarter, down 18 and three quarters. The May at 6.82 and three quarters, 18 and a quarter lower. July, $6.89, down 18. September at 6.35 and a half, 18 and three quarters. December at 5.87 and a quarter, down 23. The March at 5.96 and a quarter for next year, down 22 and three quarters. March beans at 13.48 and three quarters, up 4 3/4. May at 13.55 and a half, 6 1/2 higher. And the November beans at $13.21 finished a penny higher. The January of next year at $13.25, up 1 1/4. Meal was 60 cents higher. Bean oil down 19 cents on the day. Live cattle futures finished the April contract at $117.65, up 12 1/2 cents. The June were down 50 at $116.95. Feeders finished the March at $131.80, down 40. And April lean hogs at $89.85, up a dime for the day. You're listening to the Closing Market Report. Here's what the outside markets look like at this hour. Nearby crude oil at $102.68 a barrel, down $1.70. Ethanol at $2.50 7/10, 3 6/10 lower. April natural gas at $3.83 3/10, down 9 7/10. Heating oil or diesel fuel at $3.04 3/10 a cent, down 2 7/10. And the gold at $1,412.20 today, finished $17.10 lower. The Dow Jones Industrial Average now just above 12,000 at 12,019, just about 194 points lower, and the dollar at 77.27 is up 0.55. The CRB at 354.45 is down 5.78 on the day. Here's what the weather forecast looks like as it comes from the National Weather Service for this afternoon. Mostly cloudy skies, a chance of rain, snow, sleet before 3 this afternoon. Mostly cloudy, a high near 40. Northwest winds at between 14 and 17. They'll gust to 24. Precip at 30% chance. Tonight, mostly cloudy, gradually becoming mostly clear, a low of 26. North-northwest winds between 8 and 13. They'll gust as high as 20. And Friday, sunny skies, a high near 51. Northwest winds at around 8 miles an hour. Friday night, partly cloudy, a low of 38 degrees. Southwest winds at 8 to 14. Winds could gust as high as 20 miles an hour.
Support for the Closing Market Report comes from AgriGold Hybrids, featuring the AgriGold Giants, a group of 5 new hybrids designed to meet the performance standards of yield, health, and consistency required by Midwestern corn growers. More information is at AgriGoldGiants.com or at 800-262-7333.
Todd Gleason services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report. It is a production of Illinois Public Media. On this Thursday afternoon, we're joined by Dan Zwicker of ADM Grain Group out of Decatur, Illinois, to take a look at the agricultural futures markets. Hi, Dan. How are you today?
Doing fine, Todd.
Well, let me go through some of the numbers from the United States Department of Agriculture that were released this morning. Carryovers were mostly unchanged. Corn remains at 675, beans at 140, wheat at 843. That was actually up from the February projection at 818. Cotton at 1.9 million bales is unchanged. Global carryover at 123.14 million metric tons, up from the 122.51. Beans at 58.33, up slightly from 58.21. Wheat at 181.9, up from the 177.77 million metric tons in February. What did you make of those numbers?
Well, there's nothing new there. And, you know, I think for the most part, most people in the trade didn't expect a lot, only minor changes in world production numbers. And as far as USA balance sheets of corn and soybeans was, you know, no change. Wheat, they did lower the exports a little bit. My guess is that they just basically took a pass on everything until they see what this 31st stocks number is, because then they'll have to probably make some adjustments, either increase demand or lower demand, depending upon what this number is. So a lot of times they don't do much in the March report, so they don't have to backtrack if they would have to. So, and the fact that there was nothing bullish in the report, it wasn't really bearish, there's just nothing bullish, and that just continued the liquidation that basically began earlier in the week. And, of course, the negative news that we're hearing out of China may be slowing the economy. And, you know, you just kind of look clear across the board. There's just about a red sign every place except for the dollar here today. So it just kind of everybody wanted out of their longs, and the ags went along with it here today.
Negative news out of China, yet soybeans managed to hold steady for the day, actually to gain a few cents. What do you make of that one?
Well, we haven't got the South American crop harvested yet. I mean, the South American crop is going to come off, and USDA did raise it a little bit. There is still some demand here for U.S. Inventories until everybody switches to the South. And the bean market had already taken kind of a decline here prior, a week ago or so. So beans were already had softened up somewhat compared to corn. Now wheat probably, if there's any kind of technical damage done, probably is more so in the wheat complex than probably anything else. And this is somewhat seasonally correct. New crop wheat futures a lot of times will put a top in during the March time frame, and then decline down into a summer harvest low. And I think some of the precip amounts that we've had around the growing region has people a little more optimistic maybe on wheat production than probably what they thought here 30 or 60 days ago.
Did the heavier loss in the December contract, it was down the most for the day, down 23 cents, did that make any difference to the way you think about that contract and new contract corn or new crop corn that is?
No, not yet. I mean, I think you were still above on the new crop. We're still above the low that we had here a week or two ago when we had that big spike down and then we had a big rally back up. So we're pretty well stayed within that range. We'll have to kind of see how this plays out over the next day or two, but it's not uncommon for corn futures to turn sideways during the month of March after a seasonal climb, usually out of an October low. Then basically what it's doing is waiting on the new growing season to begin, and we'll take 1 week at a time depending upon, you know, how the crop goes in the ground. We'll get it kicked off with USDA's estimate there on the 31st. I think somewhat the trade, you can kind of see that it was starting to happen earlier this week when we were over the beef house. Old crop futures were starting to lose ground to new crop. There's a general belief that maybe we got a few more corn stocks around than basically what the market was thinking 30 or 60 days ago. But we're not going to have any clarity on that issue until the 31st report, and that'll kind of clarify things up a little bit.
And while new crop was down today, that's closing the gap, actually, but mostly the old crop is closing the gap on the new crop, right?
Well, I'm away from my guess, so I don't know exactly how today's action.
With the exception of today, new crop was down 5 more cents than old crop was today. But
yesterday, though, we had, I think, old crop down sharply lower, and new crop, I think, kind of held steady yesterday. So we had about 3 days of yeast corn around this 610 in an area. And a lot of times when you have three tight closes, you get ready for a big day, either up or down. And I guess today it was down instead of up. So, I believe it's mostly a sideways market, unwinding some longs. We do have some long liquidation going on in the complex. I think a lot of it is driven by a lot of outside noise. I think probably one of your more bearish factors here is probably the slowing down or thinking that China is economy slowing down and may slow down some of the demand side.
And that would be the most bearish factor. Will there be a way to tell really whether that's happened or not in any report that we see?
Well, I don't think we'll see it on any report. I think we'll have to kind of just monitor their economy on a day-by-day, week-by-week basis to see if indeed it has slowed enough. I think you'll begin to probably get a feel of that on any kind of trade activity. But I'm not too concerned about it at this point.
And didn't we not have a sale to an unexplained or to this morning too for soybeans? Is that right? I think that's
a what?
Didn't we have another sale this morning of soybeans? But it wasn't determined which destination that was. And usually we assume that's China.
Well, I don't know. I've been out of the office. I knew the sales were probably a little lighter, both on corn and beans, than what the market would like to have, but I didn't know if we got an unknown destination sale.
I think we did. All right. Anything else to add before I let you go for the day?
No, that's about it.
Okay. Thank you so much, Dan.
Very well.
Dan Zwicker is with ADM Grain Group. He's out of Decatur, Illinois, and joins us here on the Closing Market Report. That happens each and every Thursday afternoon.
Agricultural programming is made possible by Farm Credit Services of Illinois. Farm Credit Services of Illinois has been providing for farmers' credit and insurance needs for over 90 years, including real estate, operating and machinery loans, crop and life insurance protection, and programs for young and beginning farmers. Agricultural information is made possible with support from ADM. ADM thanks America's farmers because everything they do starts with you.
Listening to the Closing Market Report. It's a Thursday afternoon. On the phone line with us, Gary Schnitke. He's a farm management specialist in the College of Agricultural, Consumer, and Environmental Sciences. You can read information from him on the FarmDoc website. He's part of the FarmDoc team. Gary, thanks so much. Let's talk crop insurance because by the 15th, producers have to have those decisions made. They're asking some questions of you. I suppose most commonly they're asking about GRIP and the RP products, and which works best in which cases. Should they take crop insurance this year? Let's start there.
Yeah, we've had a number of producers ask whether they should take crop insurance at all, and the thought being that the premiums are pretty high. I think unless you're in a very strong financial position, that the answer is probably yes, you should take crop insurance. And there's a couple of things more crucial than usual. One is our high base prices, which you can cause revenue to be above cost in most cases, which is unusual. Another thing is sure, and if you take to be eligible for sure, you have to take crop insurance, and 80% coverage level will maximize crop or sure payments. So both of those factors suggest, yeah, I should probably still take crop insurance this year.
And the difference between GRIP and the RP products, and there are a couple of different versions of the RP products too.
Yeah. People are looking at GRIP, which is the county level product, versus RP. RP or GRIP this year has very high premiums, and we see some counties approaching $100 an acre for a 90% coverage level and a 100% protection level. More counties in the $70 per acre premium range. GRIP will do GRIP provides protection more for cases in which prices decline. So if you're concerned about price declines, that's probably GRIP would be a better product than RP. RP tends to have less lower cost, and it does a really good job of protecting overall, but you know, more so for the yield side than the price side.
If people were taking a look at the RP product and they were talking about maybe the exclusionary product, what's the difference in?
RP is like the old CRC. Its guarantee will increase if the harvest price is above the projected price. So if the harvest price for corn turns out to be higher than $6.01 or soybeans $13.49, RP will use the higher harvest price in its guarantee. RP with exclusion won't. RP with exclusion will be about half the cost of RP. I would caution, if you're going to use RP with exclusion, one of the things that you probably shouldn't do is pre-harvest hedge a lot of the grain, because that's what the pre-harvest hedge is, or the guarantee increase is meant to protect against if you've done a lot of or plan on doing pre-harvest hedging. The other thing I would say is that if you're looking at that guarantee increase, I would think hard about not using it for corn, because we could see higher prices for corn if we have any sort of yield disruption this year. So there's probably an equal chance of having higher harvest prices this year and then in many years.
So take crop insurance, GRIP if you can afford it or you want to afford it, and then the RP product, but not with the exclusionary, probably. And if you do take a revenue protection product, make sure that you try to hedge out the crop before we get to harvest season. Is that all correct?
Yep. And the RP, you know, we would like, you know, you're typically thinking of pricing, you know, 25% of production by about planting time and more of that as we go through the summer.
Thanks so much, Gary.
You're welcome.
Gary Schnitke is a farm management specialist right here on the Urbana-Champaign campus at the University of Illinois. He's a member of the Farm Doc team. You can read more from him at farmdoc.illinois.edu. In fact, there are all kinds of calculators that have to do with crop insurance there. You can go and put your own farm in right now at www.farmdoc.illinois.edu.
Support for today's broadcast comes from Common Ground Food Co-op in Lincoln Square Mall. Community-owned since 1974, Common Ground is a full-service grocer featuring locally grown and organic foods, as well as homemade healthy deli meals. More information is available at 352-3347 or at the co-op.
Hi, this is Illinois Public Media Director of Agricultural Programming, Dave Dickey. Coming up next, the SAP is running in East Central Illinois. Lisa Brotz says that can mean only one thing, SAP boil party, in her latest edition of In My Backyard.
I first talked about my neighborhood's maple sugaring effort, the Prairie Sugar Collective, a few weeks ago. The group, whose core is made up of several people in or near our neighborhood in Urbana, but includes participants from Champaign, Urbana, Mahomet, and places even further afield, had just gotten off the ground with plans to tap area maple trees. With permission, of course. Then the plan was to boil down the sap into maple syrup for sharing over pancakes and waffles sometime this spring. Syrup, like spring, can be long and a little difficult in coming. When we last left the Prairie Sugar Collective, they were waiting for the sap to run. Tappable trees had been located in Champaign and Vermilion counties, but the weather had to be just right to tap them. Sap runs when the days warm above freezing, but the nights cool down to below freezing. It's not a very wide window. If the weather gets too warm, the sap stops tasting good, and if the weather gets too cold, the sap won't run. But the weather cooperated for a couple of weeks, and one chilly but perfect for the task at hand Saturday, there was finally enough collected sap to hold the very first Prairie Sugar Collective sap boil. The mood was festive. Fourth grader Erica Baker delivered a pan of brownies to hungry participants. Her father, Yash Baker, stoked the fire.
This is the very first boil down of sap. We had a 8-hour burn yesterday with just straight water, testing the equipment, checking for leaks. And everything checked out, so we went ahead and did a test burn today with the actual sap.
About 15 people had been there in shifts throughout the day. They performed tasks like collecting wood, stoking the fire, and taking the sap's temperature as it boiled. The fire has to stay tended for hours and hours, or the water won't evaporate out of the sap. Water has to boil steadily out of the sap in order to become syrup. It's a process of reduction in cooking, just writ very large. So, like a busy restaurant kitchen needs a chef to oversee operations, a sap boil needs a boil chief to do the same. And that night's boil chief was Kent Ferguson. This was his first time making syrup, much less managing a boil.
So this is just steam, right?
This is just steam coming off the pans. There is no visible smoke. It is a clean burn coming out of the top of the chimney. Just stoked it up. We got another 15 minutes. We got to pop it back open, check it again.
For how long?
We probably got another 2-3 hours.
The evaporator is a beautiful piece of stainless steel machinery, and Kent was learning on the job, and with lots of advice and assistance from others, how the boil was supposed to go.
One of the things I learned is the sugar concentrates. You add water at the beginning, and as it works its way around, it pushes the concentrate forward. So it doesn't really mix. It stays separate and pushes it forward. And that's why now in our front pan, we have what's starting to look like what it looks like when candies, you're making candy, you know, how the bubbles start to hold, and it has almost an oily look to it. And back behind here, where it's water, it's boiling like water. It looks just like water. There's parts of it that we're not so involved in, the tapping and the bottling afterward. We're trying not to mess this up.
The syrup from that night, I'm not sure of the yield, but it can't have been more than a gallon, has been bottled or canned by other group members for use later this spring. The bottling and canning, just like the boiling, are task-driven affairs that are also very much social events. These events have been a chance for people to catch up with each other after the long winter. Spring is coming. The Cardinals are working their spring repertoire. The snow's gone. The ground is softening up. And the sap is mostly done running. There have been some difficulties, of course. We're dealing with nature, which can be capricious. And we're all just people with different ideas about how things should go and what should be accomplished. The learning curve has been steep sometimes. But in the end, the syrup is the thing. There's something mysteriously cool about the work and the discipline that has to go into it to make syrup happen. But what's most powerful to me is the alchemy of it, the transformation of what looks like water from maple trees into something we all love, something sweet.
Lisa Brock's stories can also be heard on our website, WILLAG.org. Click on the In My Backyard link in the right navigation window. And you can also read her occasional blogs at majorprogression.wordpress.com. If you have an idea for In My Backyard, email us at willagstaff@illinois.edu. That's willagstaff@illinois.edu. It's National Crab Meat Day. On this day in agricultural history in 1858, the first U.S. patent for a street mailbox was issued to Albert Potts of Philadelphia. It comprised a simple metal box designed to attach to a lamppost. By August, the boxes were found along the streets of Boston and New York City. In 1876, the new state of Colorado created a state board of agriculture to oversee a new agricultural college. which, according to its formation document, shall be a high seminary of learning in which graduates of both sexes can study those sciences and arts which bear directly on agriculture. In 1891, the Washington State Legislature approved the Puyallup Agriculture Experiment Station to study horticulture. In 1900, Howard Aiken was born. An American mathematician, he invented the Harvard Mark I, the forerunner of the modern electronic digital computer. By the way, the machine weighed 35 tons and had 500 miles of wire. In 1974, about 9,000 ILWU sugar workers went on strike for 39 days in opposition to plans by Grove Farm to displace some 100 workers. By the way, at the time of the strike, sugar came in at $300 to $350 a ton. Soon after, it went as high as $1,260 a ton because of an international shortage of sugar. And that's this day in agricultural history.
Support comes from Stuart Peterson, since 1985 offering strategic commodity consulting and marketing services to help producers manage market opportunities and risks. The firm develops strategies customized to each client's goals and operation size. More information is available at www.stuart-peterson.com.
It's a Thursday afternoon. You're listening to the Closing Market Report. I'm Todd Gleason. On the phone line with us, as usual for a Thursday, Pete Levitt, agricultural meteorologist. Good afternoon to you, Pete.
Good afternoon, Todd.
It's a little rainy, a little sleety, awful gray, kind of windy outside. What's the weather forecast for, well, our part of the world for the next several days? And if you call
well, I think you're seeing about the worst of it now. We have the winds are around the northwest and brisk, and that's cooler and drier air coming in, and we'll see slow clearing come down through Wisconsin and northeast Iowa and overspread the state this evening and tonight. So we have some mostly clearing weather. Another quick disturbance comes along right behind that first front, though, for Saturday. It won't produce anything in the way of precipitation, but it may kick up the winds a little bit. So I'd look for tomorrow to be a breezy day. And on the mild side tomorrow relative to today, we'll get temperatures maybe getting up into the 50s tomorrow. And then it cools off as the front goes by. Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, all fair weather right through that first part of the week. Starting off cool, warming up as we move through the week. Temperatures getting well up into the 50s, maybe a few 60s by the time we get Tuesday, Wednesday, and into Thursday of next week. So things are looking very nice in the short range here. This is about as bad as it gets right now.
Yeah, that sounds very, very good. But, of course, you said short range, and, well, this is the time of the year where things can get a little rocky, and certainly we're changing from winter to spring. What do you see as we make that transition?
Well, I think the key to this year's pattern is this very strong jet stream we've had all year, displaced further south than normal, which has allowed colder air to come down into the northern tier of states pretty easily this season. And that pattern looks like it's going to persist through the end of March and into April. What that means is that we have a strong jet across the lower 48, and that in that strong jet are embedded these disturbances, we call them short wave features, which move along in the strong jet stream. And when they come in at low latitude like this with some cooler air around and an opportunity to tap Gulf moisture as these systems come in the West Coast, get across the Rockies, and then pick up moisture east of the Rockies into the Mississippi Valley. That's when we start getting the ingredients for storm systems, and particularly severe local storms. I think this season will be featured by an above-normal number of outbreaks of severe local storms. You can't predict exactly where they'll be. A broad brush would just put it in the eastern plains, Midwest, and Mid-South, which is a large area of the country. But I think we're going to hear a lot about unsettled weather and severe storms as we move through March and April this year. Typical of a La Nina pattern, typical of a strong jet, and typical of springtime as the warmer air fights its way back in.
Thank you so much, Pete.
My pleasure.
Pete Levitt, agricultural meteorologist, joins us here on the Closing Market Report on this Thursday afternoon. By the way, you can always listen to Pete again if you'd like on our website. The address is willag.org. That's W-I-L-L-A-G.org. There we post all of our agricultural programming, including the audio from our all-day agricultural outlook. If it's not there when you get there this time around, don't worry. We'll get it up soon enough. It's all at W-I-L-L-A-G.org. Have a great Thursday afternoon. I'm Todd Gleason.